Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of All About Reality. It's Matt Goodwin here with Luke Patrick. Luke, good to see you on video after seeing you in person a couple weeks ago.
Likewise, glad you could make it to DC. I'm really excited we got Drew Davenport here. We've got one of the Eliminator auctions with him. So now we get to hang out together and talk things through and bring his unique aptitude with auctions to bear on the RSO format. It seems like a really natural fit. Drew, in that auction, I decided to go as high T as I possibly could. I drafted no wide receivers. I went all running backs just to play with the format. So I figured we would do something fun for charity. And it's one of those ones that wasn't a lot of pressure, but welcome to the program, man. We appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thank you. That is an interesting build. But yeah, I did a little messing around with that too, because the format was so unique that I thought, hey, you know, it's charity. Who cares? But yeah, thank you for having me, guys. This is awesome. Love talking auctions. Any format, hit me with it.
Yeah. So with that, Drew, Drew's coming to us from Football Guys, auction expert. Also hosts the podcast called The Auction Brief. 2020 Kings Classic auction champ, so we'll talk about that in a hot second. Criminal law expert. Anything else we're missing here? Like, we got a lot of questions like on all of these subjects, actually. I just want to make sure that we're not selling you short, because you do have a varied and storied background.
I do. It's weird. I'm at that age where I've actually done some things. But yeah, no, you got it right, man. You got it.
Okay.
Excellent stuff. Good things. You know, Drew, that speaks to something. At some points when I tell stories to my students, they act as if I just have this marvelous life. And I try to indicate to them, no, I'm just old. I've had more opportunities to do more things. And it affords me the chances to go get these things. But yeah, we start with you. And you actually got to do one of the things that Goody and I had a little bit of FOMO on. We missed out on the Fantasy Football Expo in Canton this year. So you're our first kind of eyewitness brief to that. Talk to us about what it's like. We've had Bob Lung on the program. Help paint the picture for our listeners and those who aspire to go next year.
Yeah, well, the only thing I can say is right off jump, if you're thinking about it, absolutely do it. I thought that I was going to meet like 60 different people. I only ended up meeting like 15 or 20, but I had like great conversations with everybody. So I got there on Friday, which is what most people did. And there was just like a little hangout at the hotel bar, got to know everybody, just met some people like, hey, I recognize your Twitter avatar, and, you know, just hung out a little bit. And then Saturday I was in the Kings Classic draft at the Hall of Fame. And then there was a big event called Draft Night Out, which is just, or like basically an organized party with raffles and fun stuff to win. But then everybody drafted a team. And so they had a huge room full of people just doing drafts. And then after that, there was a party down at Centennial Park in the middle of Canton. And that was really cool. It was really well done, put on by the folks at Fantasy Affair. And then on Sunday was the expo. And it was really neat that they did the expo last, because we all really got to know each other on Friday and Saturday night, kind of drinking and mixing. And then on Sunday, it was like old home week. You know, we walked around visiting each other's booths and seeing what we're up to. And then they had some breakout sessions with IDP and mock drafts and stuff. Really, really well done event by Bob Long. He did a fantastic job.
That's excellent stuff. Goody, I don't know about you, but Drew, could you speak a little bit more to the Kings Classic and what that means when you walk in that room? Were you fascinated by any of the folks in there with you? Did you feel a unique pressure with that? Or was it also kind of, hey, this is a charity, this is a nice, like a nice moment, whatever. Talk to that for a second.
No, there's a ton of pressure. So ordinarily in a charity type league, I don't worry too much about my performance. Of course I try, but you know, it's not that big a deal. But Kings Classic's a completely different other end of the spectrum, because it was designed to be the best of the best. And that's not me. I'm not saying I'm the best of the best. I work for Football Guys. So I got in because I work for Football Guys. But yeah, so he designed it to be, the Kings Classic is you do a snake draft first and you break for lunch and then you come back and you do an auction draft. So everybody has to do both. And the bottom line is he wanted to separate people who can do both, as opposed to just, hey, you're only a specialist in this or that. And so it's guys like, you know, Andy Behrens from Yahoo, Scott Pianowski from Yahoo, Corey Parson from NBC, Brad Evans, Mike Clay from ESPN, Bob Long, Bob Harris, just all these guys. And on 100%, there is a ton of pressure when you walk in the room to feel like you belong. And it's a lot because it's a 14 team league and you're in there with Sharks. It is tough. I'll tell you, I was fortunate enough to win the auction league last year. And so I got a belt showing that I won. And I walked in there and grabbed this belt and all these guys are clapping for me. And I thought, when am I going to wake up here? It was a surreal experience for me.
That's awesome. And a pressure release valve, right? When any of us walk into an RSO auction or when we walk into another auction league, that's the beauty of it. That's the tiny little adrenaline pump that gives more than a snake draft in my mind, is that there is this pressure. You know, there's a sense in which if you and I are in a draft together, it's like poker heads up. Like if we both want a player, like I have to know how far that I'm willing to go, how far you're willing to go. And it gets, you know, the beads of sweat start going, you know, that I feel I'm happy that you were able to represent and hold down the auction function and say like, look, there really is a skill set here in addition to all the luck that comes from fantasy. So
I just say, you brought up heads up poker. If there would be something I would add to my resume, I was a heads up poker specialist when I used to grind online.
That'll do it. Nice. That'll do it. So this is a reason to avoid Drew in auctions, right, Goody? Like,
right. But that's the other thing. Like there's the poker face, like you're doing this in person with people. You're not hiding behind a screen or like I'm about to, with a lot of those same names, like I'm in the Huevos Invitational with Brad and okay. Andy and Matt Harmon and Pianowski. And Pianowski has been a thorn in my side with like my partner this for years. He's just really sharp, you know. Michael Salfino, like those types, and hopefully Mike Tagliere. Like I know he's having some health issues now. I really hope thoughts and prayers are with him and his family. I saw his wife Tabby tweeted yesterday about that. So former guest of the program. So we are thinking about Mike. Definitely a great dude in the community, and we're hoping he gets out of the hospital soon. Pivoting a little bit, let's talk about this criminal law background because you do have a unique perspective. And especially like in the reality sports online vein where you have multi-year contracts where they're costing you money, not just that you're applying in an auction once and then that number goes away basically. So whereas there's a real cost in addition to an opportunity cost of grabbing a player, whether that's in a rookie draft. And like a couple of years ago, I mean, I think Luke and I, you know, unfortunately both like had to cut Darius Geis last season and, you know, we're paying him 4-year contract, albeit at a depressed rookie wage scale, as opposed to in a startup auction, but you know, nobody wants to just hand over $4 million on whatever the NFL cap is, for instance. Mm-hmm. Like, so I guess the question is like, is there any real worth in attempting, based on what you've seen in some of these NFL cases or anything else, is there any real value add or worth in attempting to evaluate or make like a risk calculus with quote unquote character concerns as fantasy GMs, especially with a long-term perspective? So like, i.e. are there any patterns, indicators on players with these concerns that would scream avoid? Or you know, and then like a follow-up question on that is with the NCAA going with the name and likeness thing, when these high profile collegiate players having an opportunity to make, you know, a lot of money while playing collegiately, do you think that changes and that could be a bellwether for any potential enhanced or worse behavior, I guess?
Yeah, let me take those in reverse order. Yeah. Because I do think that you hit on something here, that when you have the opportunity to make some money off your name and likeness at an earlier age, I think it can short circuit some of the problems. Because you still get stories of guys who come to the NFL, and even if they're making league minimum or whatever, it isn't as much as you think after you pay a, you know, an agent and all that stuff, keeping your body up and all those things. My point would be that I think that that's going to ease some of those issues and ease some of the transition. So I do think that's a concern. I mean, there are still guys who come into the NFL and have a mentality that they grew up with, that they need to still be hustling, and that creates problems. So I do think that that's a, that I do think that may ease some of those issues. But your first question about character issues and how predictable they are, I will say this. As a criminal defense attorney, I know that there are certain types of criminal elements, I guess you could say, or just really character issues that can recur. Okay, so I'm not too concerned about a guy who gets a DUI, okay, because he's out partying at the club after they win a game and he gets a DUI. Unless there's an alcohol problem, I'm not worried about that guy. I'm worried about the guys who have the violent tendencies. So one of the guys, the reason I got my big break was I was tweeting about Tyreek Hill, and Joe Bryant over there at Football Guys messaged me and said, hey, we need a legal guy. So anyway, when I was looking at Tyreek Hill, I don't know if you guys heard that phone call with his baby's mother, in which he said, you know, you should be scared of me too, that kind of thing. Now, I don't know about you fellas. I've never said that to a woman in my life. If you hear these kinds of things, there are certain indicators that as a criminal defense attorney that you see, that you know, hey, that person's going to be back. And you really look for what I call terms of art, meaning do these guys that have these violent problems in the past, do they come out and say the correct things that show you that they are either addressing them through mental health treatment or addressing them through anger counseling, because those places give you tools to deal with those things. And if they don't use the tools, you can tell because they're a little bit defiant and they're a little bit like, yeah, it's not that big a deal. They kind of blow it off. Those kind of guys are going to be back. The other kind of guys who say, oh, they taught me X, Y, and Z and what triggers me and I need some counseling. And you hear that and you say, okay, this guy gets it. He's going down the right path. The other guy doesn't. So I don't make it a huge factor when I'm figuring out long-term, but it has to be part of the equation. I would never have guessed that we're sitting here talking about this with Deshaun Watson. So that sometimes you can't see, but a guy like Tyreek Hill, he should be on your radar for a guy who could be a problem in the future.
Yeah. It's good that you note that, right? Because it is hard when you have these guys that are beloved figures like Deshaun Watson and Brett Favre, for example, who we didn't know that behind the scenes they were garnering this reputation of solicitude towards women. And like you said, using language that I would hope that none of the guys in this call and no member of our audience would ever use towards other humans, that that's respectful of their dignity, right? So that's cool. I think that's a good way of looking at it. And it's odd how much Goody and I get this question, especially with respect to RSO. And I think if you're an idealist, it's good to just avoid these guys. But if you're more cynical and you just want to play the game, it's probably good to calculate it as you're talking about, Drew, and just say, hey, this is an additional risk factor. And let's use it as a tiebreaker. If there's a comparably valued and esteemed player nearby, let's eliminate that risk factor like we might a recurring injury or something along the way. So good call there. Now, given that your specialty is auction, we want to talk about some more fun stuff with you as well.
For sure.
With RSO, we walk into a room and it's set to the NFL salary cap. So this year, you know, the most common auction format would be a budget of $200 if you play in a kind of a normal auction. So you can, in your mind, almost move that to $180 auction, but then you have a set number of these contracts, right? You got a 4-year contract, several 3-year contracts, several 2-year contracts to offer. What's your overall strategy for auction? Just walk us through it when you walk into that room with all those studs at the King's Classic or something for regular redraft or dynasty auctions with a set budget. Are you allocating by percentage to a position type, or are you playing the room or whatever? Go for it.
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit of both. What I like to do, the first thing I think people don't pay enough attention to is history. You got to look at the history of the league. If you know it, sometimes you're going to walk into a room cold and you won't know it. But I've drafted with these guys now for 2 years in the King's Classic. I went back and studied what happened in the past. That's step number one. I'm absolutely using history to see what the tendencies in the room are going to be. Step number two is I absolutely like to have a percentage of my cap allocated for certain spots, but I do it even a little more precisely than that, because the years where I said, okay, I want to get 3 wide receivers and I'm going to spend $75, it didn't work as well for me. So just me, and that's me. I think you have to do it though. Whatever makes you comfortable. the way I'm comfortable is I put an exact dollar amount on what I want to spend on each position. And that helps me to, it's sort of like putting bumpers on the bowling alley. It just gives you a comfort that I'm not going to throw a gutter ball. I at least can stay close to these values. So when I go into a room, I'm going to say my QB1, I'm going to spend X amount of dollars. And I don't stick to that. I don't want it to be handcuff me because it can handcuff you, but it's just a guide. And so I absolutely want that before I walk into a room. And when I walk into a room full of experts, it is really, it's intimidating because when I looked back at last year's prices from the King's Classic auction, it was disheartening to find there really isn't enough money to go around to make a really good team. And so I knew walking in that I was going to have holes in my roster. That's a hard thing to swallow when you walk into a draft and know this room is too big for me. And it's not necessarily for me, for anyone. You can't put together a full, excellent roster with no holes against this group of people with this many players in the room.
That's such a good call. Goody, speak to that for a moment. When you and I have talked about this before, but I feel in a similar manner in RSO, that feeling Drew's talking about at the end of an auction when I look, I'm often torn between the idea that I don't have enough money to go around, which often happens later in league cycles in my mind. And then early on in league cycles, I feel like sometimes if I don't get super aggressive early, I'm spending an awful lot of money on players I don't really care if they're on my roster or not. And so, Goody, you can speak more to Drew on this, but I want to like kind of tee you up to talk about that too. Now that we've been at this for nearly a decade together in RSO, do you find yourself being more aggressive at the beginning and just getting the guys that you want, knowing that you're not going to be able to fill the whole roster? What do you think, Good?
I think I am. I think I kind of get caught sometimes with a few different strategies. Like this past week with the podcast league, I Superflex 16 team. Aaron Rodgers is my only definitive starting quarterback for this year. I had him for this year. And so I was kind of locked in on Tom Brady no matter what. I had about $50 million to spend. I figured Brady was going to cost the majority of that $50 million, and I would just kind of piece together the rest, like basically with the approach, like have my lineup anchored by by Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers in a league that rewards accuracy and touchdowns, and then have Christian McCaffrey. Okay, that's 110 fantasy points, and my other eight spots or seven spots or whatever it is, if they can score 10 points a piece at ballpark, that's going to put me on the winning side more weeks than it won't. So in that sense, I think, you know, the money was a certain way, and especially like using, and I know there's a tactic that you like to do, Luke, is in Reality Sports Alliance, using that 1 year contract as a weapon, especially if you have a nice stack or cap space. I mean, where it gets a little messy after that is when play, and I'm jumping kind of ahead in a topic that we had on for Drew, but like getting into a no man's land later where guys I liked who maybe I wanted to give a 4 year contract to were going down the line for way more than guys I really liked and wanted on my roster and kind of in my head had them. So like Donovan Peoples-Jones, I think, you know, maybe this is Odell's last year in Cleveland, for instance, you know, of my Browns or whatever, or, you know, or a player like Marquez Callaway, who's getting noticed out of camp as potentially wide receiver one, absent Michael Thomas. Those players were going for 4 years, 25 million total, 30 million, 32 million. And so then, when I look at the end of the auction, I see that I don't really have much in terms of receivers. I think the only receiver I picked with my six or seven slots after that, and I had my starters kind of determined, was Colin Johnson. So guy from Texas who I think like down the line for the Jaguars, 4 years and 5 million total. So I think that, you know, I do like, if I feel like I have one specific need, I want to make sure I'm getting that and paying for it. And then I'll let the other stuff happen in RSO. And in just more traditional redrafts and everything else, I guess this is another question for Drew, is you said, say you allocate $80 for your top two running backs. I know that's probably low, but anyways, if your first one costs you, say you were saying you're pegging them as $55 and say you paid $57 for them, are you taking the other two off of that and still staying in that swim lane or for the position, or like, are you stretching it if there's say Nick Chubb comes up and he's going for $2 more than your comfort, than what your remaining thing is, are you going to take that leap?
Yeah. Well, the one thing I will say, I preach in general that the top level players, you're never going to be upset to pay a few extra bucks for a top level guy. What you are going to be upset about is stopping. And then later on, you're throwing $14 at Emmanuel Sanders. I don't think that's winning auction drafting. So always, if it makes you a little uncomfortable to overspend, do it on the top guys, and you won't feel bad about it when you leave the room. But the next thing I would say is, you know, to your question about where do I pull the money from, I always have in my head a hierarchy of where that money's going to come from if I spend too much. Usually that's coming off of my quarterback, but that's in a typical redraft. If I'm in like a dynasty or something like that, then I'm pulling it from tight end or from running. Like running back in like a dynasty situation, I just don't care about running backs. I just don't worry about them. So I'm pulling that money from the back of my running backs, from my back of my tight end spots. And I have a hierarchy in my head. Here's where I'm going to pull the money if I need it.
It's interesting. And you find yourself kind of at odds with the typical RSO auction and salary cap rooms, the initial bidding that we've been a part of because of the perceived scarcity of running backs. And I don't know if this is true for you at a lot of auctions. Does that lend you a competitive advantage, do you think, Drew? Because I think a lot of guys do get out over their skis knowing, hey, this is my one chance this year to get a running back I really like. If I don't have the first overall pick, I'm never going to have Christian McCaffrey in any other format. But I could get him here, and I could pay an extraordinary amount of money to employ Christian McCaffrey for this fantasy season. Talk to me about how that usually makes your team look. Does that mean that you're three or four or even five deep with some of the best wide receivers? Is that the plan that you're going with?
Yeah. And this is something I came up with. So it happened not coincidentally around the time my home league switched to a full flex, which means we only are requiring you to start one at every position. And then you have four flexes. It can't be a quarterback, but so you could end up starting just one running back. And then I came up with this strategy, like, why am I spending this money on running back when there's so much uncertainty? And I don't necessarily mean with the CMC Cook level. I mean, if you were in the middle of round two to the end of round three last year, of all those running backs, very few of them actually did anything close to what we thought they were going to do. So my whole philosophy shifted, like I said, about 5 years ago, where I decided there aren't enough running backs in that middle tier for me to want to take a chance. If I'm in a snake draft, excuse me, I have to do that. But if I'm in an auction, I can punt on the entire group of guys. Now, that means I'm going to miss out on, say, Aaron Jones last year. He was great from that end of second round slot. And I missed out on Aaron Jones last year. But you know what? I also missed out on not getting five just complete albatrosses to your roster. So I punt on the entire group of running backs in that spot. And so I believe it has given me a competitive advantage, to work my way around to your question. I do believe that it has. And unfortunately, I think I'm seeing this summer that maybe people are catching up a little bit, because the wide receiver prices have been creeping up. The aggressiveness with which people are approaching the wide receiver spot is creeping up. And I think I might have to switch again, but I do believe that if you just bail out of you have one running back that's a cornerstone of your team, I think you need that. But after that, you just bail out of the position completely, pour your money into wide receiver. And in dynasty leagues, I'm pouring money into the quarterback too, quarterback as well. And so I think it does make me have a higher degree of success coming out of the draft.
Awesome. Our listeners would know that if we walked into a listener league with you, sir, so you'd have I would be spending my 4-year big contract at a startup auction on Jonathan Taylor. I've been preaching that even with the recent news. That's like my thing. Goody could go a number of different ways. He's much more wily than I am. Like he can go, but he might go Nick Chubb. He might go somebody younger. But the world's your oyster in an auction with guys like us. And so at that startup, you have 1 4-year contract and 2 3-year contracts typically in the RSO format. Drew, why don't you tell our listeners, who are the wide receivers that they should be going to get if they're following your game plan? Because if they could, any receiver in the NFL, they can have for 4 years, one of them for 4 years and two of them for 3 years. Who are you pointing our listeners to, do you think?
Well, I'm not going to, I won't go super crazy here. Justin Jefferson is a guy that is just unbelievable. And I completely whiffed on him. My concern with Jefferson is what they're going to do at quarterback here soon, because I don't know that Cousins is going to be around long-term. So that worries me. The guys I'd be going after are...
Next week also, maybe. Sorry.
That's all right.
Luke's a Vikings fan. I have to take my openings when I have a chance. So.
Yeah, I love Jefferson. Diggs is still really young. But so if I'm picking a 4-year guy, it's really hard to argue against a guy like a Tyreek Hill, who's tethered to a guy who's going to be around and going to be relevant. I don't like the situations like Hopkins, Ridley. I know this is sacrilege, but Terry McLaurin, I don't know that I'm going after a guy like that. So a 4-year guy, I'm looking at Hill or Diggs or somebody like that, but that's aiming pretty high. I still really like Allen Robinson. So 3-year guys, I'd be looking at your Tampa Bay, Chris Godwin. I think Cooper Kupp is underrated. And of course, you know, CeeDee Lamb might be the gold standard. So maybe you throw a 4-year at CeeDee Lamb.
That's excellent. And frankly, a diversity from what we've been preaching and what some of our earlier guests have. So that's excellent. That's some good food for thought for our listeners. Cooper Kupp is the one that I want to press back on a little bit. Talk to me about what you see. Is it just the Stafford? Are you a believer that Stafford is a significant upgrade over Jared Goff? Are you on Team Stafford in that sense?
I am. I am. And I one caveat is I hope that Stafford's back is okay. And I forget who it was that said to me, maybe it was David Dodds a couple of weeks ago, who said, I don't like my 32-year-old quarterbacks with back issues. I hear you, bud. I hear you. But I will say about Kupp, I'll say this. And I have this, I'm going to name drop here for a second, if you let me. So one of my buddies from Dayton is really good friends with Sean McVay. And I got sort of the scouting report on Kupp and just sort of lit me up, because he is the key to their offense, because he's got deep speed, but he's also he's got such quick, short space speed. So it's called quickness, whatever. So he gets it out of his breaks real quick. You know, he's a threat near the goal line. He's the engine of the Rams offense in their passing game. And I know Robert Woods is awesome, not disparaging him. I think Cooper Kupp had a weird year touchdown wise. So I just believe in his talent. I believe in how much Sean McVay believes in him. I think Kupp could have a big year.
That's good stuff. Now, I like that you kind of tipped your hand. You showed us your cards a little bit. You have these pieces of information. We all do. We have a little, kind of behind the scenes stuff that we bring. Goody, one of my favorite things that you asked, and I want to put to Drew, you've raised it for me and I never thought it before. When I get into RSO rooms, I love to be on camera. I actually love to like kind of run commentary and throw people off.
I hate being on camera with that, because I have no poker face. I'm like really not good at lying.
Yeah, and see, I look at it as like talking trash when I'm playing like pickup basketball, like old man. I love to just run my mouth. It's the one time I try to be a really a considerate person in real life. And I have 3 daughters and I teach at institutions surrounded by really smart, nice people. I like to use these moments with you guys as like moments just, I can just pull the trigger, just like go crazy a little bit. So, Drew, how about you? Like if we're in a room, are you the guy with the camera off and just behind the scenes sniping people, or are you face to face engaging in the banter?
Yeah, so let me take this from two angles. If I'm in a room and it's an online room and that's what we're doing, absolutely my camera's off. I feel like anything I'm giving you, I'm giving you something. Even if I don't think I'm giving you something, I am. And I'm not giving anybody anything. So absolutely would turn it off. I wouldn't even have any sound, nothing. I don't want nothing.
Drew's not listening to my nonsense while he's doing his
own. No, I'm not. I'd be ignoring it. Yeah, I'd just be like, yeah, this guy, whatever. I'd try to find a way to mute you. I don't know. No, but I do think that there's an advantage to be gained there. So it's one of the things I've talked about all summer, which is that there is a healthy amount of gamesmanship that goes along with what we're doing. And I had this could sound like another name drop, but I really just want to bring up this point. I had Matthew Berry on a couple of weeks ago, and he just says, he's the kind of guy who razzes people the whole time. And I think it's hilarious because that would not be allowed in one of my rooms, one of my other draft rooms. It's totally cool. People are doing shots and drinking and it's loud and boisterous. That would be allowed. But in one of my rooms, it wouldn't be allowed. Like that kind of trying to push people into extra bids or whatever. So it's a little more subtle. And you get to that point where it's just like you hear a bid and then it's starting to slow down and it's way too low. And you just hear the room go, or they sigh or they try to get their point across. So there's a healthy amount of gamesmanship. I don't think that that's good or bad. I think you have to go with what the room gives you. And if that's going to be part of what you do, Luke, then I'm going to learn, hey, what some of that means coming from you. And hopefully I'm going to be able to use it against you. Maybe. I don't know.
No, I suspect you would. And Goody's been trying to mute me for 3 years now. It just doesn't work out for him, along the way. But I suspect you would. I do think I'm a fairly transparent player. And and we've spoken about this. When you especially as I've gotten into, I had my first moment when I joined an RSO league and the guy started to negotiate a trade with me. And he said, wait a second, are you the Luke Patrick from the pod? I started dying laughing. I was like, yeah. So he at that point, you could tell he was a listener and he knew what I wanted. And and it actually, as you said, it's a lot had already been given away. And that's part of the function of someone like you who are a much more well-known figure to an extent, right? You've already given away, you've already shown your cards to us in a real way that if we're thoughtful people who admire your work as we do, we should be paying attention to say, okay, this is what he wants. And that can both facilitate good moments. And it can also lead to these other things. Goody, your other question here, and you can cue it up, is about bidding in auction and who you nominate. Talk about that one for us for a second.
I'm curious about who and when you nominate players. In Reality Sports Online, I'm not great. It's something I don't feel like I'm good at. There's a 15, you can set the time, but it's 15 seconds typically. And I usually don't have a ton of players queued up because I think a lot of it's situational. And I try not to necessarily submit guys that I'm interested in, especially early on. Especially if I'm depleted of cap space, I have to wait out things. But I guess I know I did listen to the podcast with Matthew Berry, and absolutely, you get a guest like Matthew Berry, you name drop. We've had him on also. Great. Total good dude. Sent my kids copies of his book, autographed, just salt of the earth, basically. So I'll never think a bad thought about Matthew Berry, even when he spent 15 minutes of the SFB Podathon last year talking smack about the fact that I hadn't made my pick in the first round yet. as Luke can attest to. So
it sounds like Matthew.
So when you have Matthew on, I know Matthew's kind of a guy hey, if I want Travis Kelce, I want to know whether I'm down that path with him and how much that's going to cost me. But I guess hearing that, I kind of want to hear what your strategy is for nominating players, mm-hmm. and how that may change depending on where you are in different things.
Yeah. And it does change. And you're so right that it's situational, but I still think you can do some things to prepare because you said, one of the points that Matthew made, and I love that he made it, I get a lot of pushback. The one thing that I get pushback on in my auction advice is people love to give the advice, just wait, and you'll get a better deal. That is not how it works. If you've done enough auction drafting, you know that there are certain players you just can't wait on. It doesn't matter. If you wait, somebody's going to call them out in three players anyway. So I always say there should be some cornerstones to your roster that you are after that you need to get out there early with your nominations. And one of the things that I think that drives me nuts the most, that is a pet peeve of mine, you're in an auction where you have very little control about anything that's going on. What people are bidding, what order the players come up in, some guy may wake up one day and he may be driving to the draft and listen to Sirius Radio and they say, so-and-so had a good day in practice. And then they go in and they bid 10 extra dollars than they would have. They don't even know it that they're doing it. Point being, you have very little control in the room. One of the things that you control is your nominations. And so I think it's absolutely one of the least tapped skills that auction players have is figuring out what the right time is for a nomination and crafting your nomination strategy. So a lot of people wait until they're on the clock the day of the draft and they're just like, okay, well, I got 15 seconds. Who's it going to be? You should have already run through the process. And if you've run through the mental process of preparing, of course, it's not going to go how you think it is, but going through the process of preparing what guys are going to be appropriate to nominate at what points, it dials you in so that you make better decisions in the moment. So I think that it's really important. Nomination strategy is one of the biggest things you can do. And I really believe that, like Matthew said, you get the guys out early that are going to be important for determining which way your draft's going to go. So your draft's going to go this way if I get Kelce, but if I don't get him, I'm dumping out a tight end and I'm going to go this way. So you have to get Kelce out there early. Otherwise you wait, then you don't get him and then you're screwed because there's not enough players left.
I like that. The only corollary that I would add to it, because I actually am totally in lockstep with you. I think it's the auction is more fun and it goes better if you're prepared going in and you have a coherent strategy. Goody, I feel like this is one of the things that I actually am adept at in the RSO room. And Drew, to your point, one of the things that I try to do is I have a list of players that I want to nominate that I want and a list of players that I want to nominate that I don't want that I know are going to suck salary. And for example, guys on like the nominations I would make that I like this year are guys that are behind the top tiers that won't be exciting. And if I nominate them right away, people are not going to spend as much on them. For example, in the tight end tier, I still believe in Mark Andrews. He's not a sexy name like Hockenson and Pitts and the big three. So if I nominate him before them, people are in their mind, everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to get one of those better guys. I don't need to spend my money on Mark Andrews. And that's one of the ways I like approaching positions, or like a Chris Carson, who's not viewed as sexy, but I'm like, hey, I like this player. And if I nominate him before all the really good running backs in the first tier are gone, then people are going to be like, I'm going to save for getting my big boys. I don't have to throw money at Chris Carson. So that's the only thing I would add is I'm with you. I like throwing out both big players that I like that I'm going to lock in a big contract, but also lower tier ones that I'm like, I like him. For example, your Cooper Kupp, I bet you could land him early at auction better than at a better price than later, for example.
Yeah. And Luke, I just want to say 1000%. I love that you said that because that's the other thing I talk about, which is everyone wants to nominate the big guys and then wait. Like, oh, I'm going to wait on Andrews and he'll be cheap later. Well, nobody's going to forget about Mark Andrews. So no, you get him out there when Kelce, Waller, Kittle are still on the board, and you're absolutely right. There's a psychological component. And that's what I love about auction drafts. It's all about like human psychology. If you've had the thought, they've had the thought. So if you're sitting there and Saquon Barkley's up and he goes too cheap, well, that's because they're thinking the same thing you are, which is I'm unsure about Saquon Barkley. So same thing. I'm bidding on Andrews. I got four other guys I could take. Who cares about Andrews? You get a couple dollar discount.
Very good. Well, Drew, that's my last one coming from me to you. Goody, we're short on time with this great guest. We look forward to more time with him in talking on different formats and things in the future. But I really appreciate you coming on. I love the idea of being in a room with you. Hopefully we will see one another at the Fantasy Expo next year. But Goody, you still got a couple questions for our guy. So go for it.
Oh, sure. I mean, Drew's done such a good job of like addressing a lot of the things. So, I mean, one thing, like I said, I just wanted to explore. Do you view there being, especially in Dynasty, do you view there being such a thing as like an auction, no man or no woman's land, basically, like where there's certain players where, I guess like with the contracts and the salary cap of Reality Sports Alliance, you have $182 million to spend this year and whatever the cap changes to, it typically goes up. like I feel for me, and maybe Luke can chime in too, I feel like I'm either paying above $20 million for someone I really, really like, or, you know, like lower than 10 for somebody that I'm speculating on. Is there some of that math going on in your head if you were approaching it that way? I know a lot of it's based on the $200, and I mean, Dynasty, yeah, it may be different, but.
Yeah, no, I think there absolutely is. And there's a, what I always refer to is, and it's like the people are talking about this year with the running back dead zone, but it's expanded even more, especially at wide receiver. And it's what I like to call like the who cares zone, where it's like there's like 15 or 20 dudes that are the same. So I can't see going in somewhere to a draft and being like, I gotta have Juju Smith-Schuster. Like there's no reason for that. There's no reason to plant your flag, because, and I think it comes back to something I preach about a lot, which is humility. It's like, you're not always going to be right about your player evaluations. In fact, you're going to be wrong a lot. So what's the point of planting your flag in the middle of a group of 25 dudes who may or may not do what you think they're going to do? So instead of planting your flag, look for the value. Just go with the value and wherever it takes you, and be happy there, as opposed to planting your flag on a player that may be like a bunch of other players. So I think there absolutely is a dead zone, a zone in there where I just don't worry too much about it, and I'm just going for value.
Excellent stuff. Well, Drew, you have firmly planted yourself in the zone of people that will care about this podcast when it comes out. So we appreciate the work that you've done in the industry. It's been a long time coming and getting you on, and we're really excited about it. And it was very gracious of you to spend some time with us heading into the weekend. Where should people go looking if they want to interact with you, if they want to read your stuff? What are we looking for from you in the days to come?
Yeah, thanks, guys. I can't believe it's been 45 minutes. It's like, this goes so fast. I really enjoy talking about this stuff, and you guys obviously are good at it. And so coming at it from that perspective is even more fun for me. So anyway, thank you for having me. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Drew FBG Auctions. That's football guys in the middle there, so a lot of people don't hear that right, but Drew FBG Auctions on Twitter. Feel free to hit me up for draft advice. A lot of people don't know, I have a YouTube channel. It's just short little two minute videos that I put out. That's called The Auction Brief. And I also have a podcast also called The Auction Brief. And that's in its first summer. And we're wrapping up next week, but there's a ton of episodes that you can go back to. They're mostly evergreen about auction theory and things like that. So thank you guys for having me, and I appreciate the platform and appreciate the conversation.
Excellent stuff. Definitely go listen to The Auction Brief and check out those videos. It seems like it was very complimentary of what we do on the RSO platform. Hopefully we get Drew taking a look at it. It seems like you would be very savvy in some of these salary cap rooms for sure. Goody, how about you, man? Now that you're done with your travels around the country, what can our listeners expect from you?
We got football coming up soon, knocking out a couple final auctions. Got the podcast guest auction on Thursday where Luke did fairly well last year, so I'm the commissioner of that. I just kind of watch that, so we'll see how that goes. You can find me on Twitter always at MattGoody2. Also a quick shout out to our sponsor BreakingTee.com for the latest wearable moments. Go to BreakingTee.com, use the promo code Wendell, WENDELL 15 for 15% off with the NFLPA license and all the other good stuff. I may have to pick up that Chubb Strong shirt that I saw there to compliment my Brown stuff and all the great MLB clothing and everything else. So we're always excited about that. Luke, it was great seeing you a couple weeks ago. Hopefully get a couple more pods. And Drew, thank you so much for coming on. It was nice to get to know you a little bit through the John Bosch Eliminator for charity. So that's Best Ball League. And we had, I think, 16 in that. And we'll see how that goes. I think Jamar Chase is my wide receiver one. So I'm a little nervous about the separation issues he's having, apparently. But what about you, Luke? Wrap this up for us.
Well, to our sponsor, I will say thank you as well to Breaking Tea. My daughters and I will be there in the shirts that you kindly sent us at the Washington Spirit game tomorrow, checking them out against Alex Morgan, our great U.S. Women's National Team player in action in a beautiful downtown park in D.C. It was great to see your family, Goody, and it has been wonderful, as I said, welcoming on Drew Davenport. It's really the privilege and the pleasure of this podcast to meet guys like him and to put a face to the names that we've been reading for years. And we point you to his stuff and encourage you to become better listeners and better players in RSO by seeking out the counsel and wisdom of guys like him. So thank you, Drew. And this has been another episode of All About Reality with Matthew Goodwin and Fantasy Doc Ock.